And now for reading and writing and radio.
Mary always said that what happened almost at that moment was magic. Suddenly, a gust of wind swung aside some loose ivy trails, and more suddenly still, she jumped forward and caught them in her hand. She had seen something under them, a round knob which had been covered by the leaves. Mary's heart began to thump, and her hands to shake a little in her delight and excitement. What was this under the hand which was square and made of iron, and which her fingers found a hole in? It was the lock of the door, which had been closed 10 years, and she put her hand in her pocket, drew out the key, and found it fitted the keyhole. She put the key in and turned it. It took 2 hands to do it, but it did turn. And then she took a long breath and looked behind her and up the long walk. No one was coming. She took another long breath, held back the swinging curtain of ivy, and pushed back the door, which opened slowly, slowly. Then she slipped through it and shut it behind her. She stood with her back against it, looking about and breathing quite fast with excitement and wonder and delight. She was standing inside the secret garden.
The author of that moment of pure magic was Frances Hodgson Burnett, but it could be you. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
We're calling it pure magic, but we're not meaning made-up magic, fairy stories, sorcerers' enchantments, but moments when the magical really does seem to enter into our own world, when a garden opens up to us as if by magic. Today, reading with me, we have Jason Kendall and Tim Veach. C.S. Lewis, who wrote The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and all the tales of Narnia, tells this story.
Once, when I was very young, my older brother brought into our room the lid of a biscuit tin, which he had covered with moss and garnished with twigs and flowers, so as to make it look like a toy garden or a toy forest. That was the first beauty I ever knew. What a real garden had failed to do, the toy garden did. It made me aware of nature, not as a storehouse of forms and colors, but something cool, dewy, fresh, exuberant. I do not think the impression was very important at the moment, but it soon became important in memory. As long as I live, my imagination of paradise will retain something of my brother's toy garden.
I was hiking and standing on a little rocky bluff looking down into a valley. The sun was out. It was a fair day. When all at once, the world turned green. I don't mean green like grass or leaves when you realize in the spring that the world has become green again. I mean actually green. The sky was green, every tree trunk and rock and the river winding away below and the fields. They all had a green sheen. It was as if the very air were green. as if some giant green lens had been slid over the world, and all the light coming into it were green. Like the Emerald City was supposed to be in The Wizard of Oz, I read when I was little. I stood still, amazed, looking, feeling, breathing in green. And after a few moments, the lid slid away again, and everything was its ordinary hue.
A number of years ago, my kids and I emerged from an evening swim at the university pool to discover that there was an April snowstorm going on. Great, fat, wet flakes were streaming down, thickly. We crossed to the car, which was parked under a lamppost, opened the door, and started to get in. But the snow, as it caught the light of the lamppost, was quite lovely, and I paused to look at it. To see it still better, I stepped up on the edge of the car floor and hung on to the roof of the car to keep steady. This brought my head well above the car top. In that position, I was not aware of the ground or anything around me, only the bright snow falling through the darkness. And as I balanced there, looking, I underwent an eerie sensation. The great flakes were no longer falling down, they were standing still, while I was rushing upward with the speed of the formerly falling snow. It was marvelous, amazing. I felt delight and lightheaded and a little dizzy. I felt as though I were flying without wings or any support at all, just speeding upward forever into the vast darkness. I flew in a trance. And then I called the kids to come look. We opened the back door, too, and we all stood enchanted, balanced a little off the earth. All of us flew. We could turn it off. Step down onto the pavement, the spell was broken. The snow fell past the lamppost. Step back up, we were again rushing toward the sky, really, really flying. We must have soared for 15 minutes before remembering our wet heads and the chill air and deciding to start for home. It was truly a magic moment. None of us has ever forgotten it.
During the ice storm, when almost all of Springfield was without power, and there were only candles in our section of town, I stood outside and looked at the sky. There wasn't the glow that there was always from the city lights. For the first time, from my own backyard, I really saw the stars. They were so bright, and there were so many of them, that I was filled with wonder. I thought, this is the way an Indian kid would have seen the sky before there were any houses or cities here.
I've camped in the Rockies. We were so close to the stars, and they were so bright that you could reach up and grab a handful and smear them in your hair.
The telescope pointed nearly up. Marcy knelt and looked. Far, far away, oh, millions of miles it felt like, hung a pale pink globe with rings surrounding it, all blurred together like a spinning colored top. It seemed suspended in rapid motion. Saturn, she gasped. It's Saturn. Why, it's just like its pictures. There it hung on a tilt with its great rings, two light ones with a dark one in the middle, faint and fuzzy and incredibly beautiful. Saturn, she whispered. Saturn. It's pretty late, said the counselor. I have to put the telescope away now. She stood at his elbow like a sleepwalker, Saturn still dazzling in her eyes, then ran blindly toward the woods. Her ears pounded and she burned all over. She barely felt the ground beneath her feet. She stumbled through brambles and pitched over logs, climbing up and running on, beating down the flaming excitement that was at the same time consuming her and charging her with energy. Saturn, she panted. Saturn, Saturn. She burst out of the trees into the light. stopped with her feet planted wide apart and laughed while the tears streamed down her face. "Saturn!" she shouted out loud and sank down in the tall grass. The world tipped slowly back into focus. "This night I saw Saturn," she whispered. Her mind spiraled off and away, refusing to be bounded. No words could tell of the clearness, the realness, the greatness, and yet the smallness of things. Oh, she thought she'd known, but she hadn't really known before. There was a universe of difference now. She closed her eyes, breathing hard, then opened them to the sky again. There was no earth, it was all universe. And there was no time, it was all eternity. She was here, but she was everywhere. It didn't matter. What did matter was space and Saturn and God.
A little light is going by, is going up to see the sky. A little light with wings. I never could have thought of it, to have a little bug all lit and made to go on wings. In the midst of the prayer, a fly had lit on the back of the pew in front of Tom Sawyer and tortured his spirit by calmly rubbing its hands together, embracing its head with its arms, and polishing it so vigorously that it seemed to almost part company with the body, and the slender thread of a neck was exposed to view. Scraping its wings with its hind legs, and smoothing them to its body as if they had been coattails, going through its whole toilet as tranquility, as if it knew it was perfectly safe, as indeed it was. For as sorely as Tom's hands itched to grab for it, they did not dare. He believed his soul would be instantly destroyed if he did such a thing while the prayer was going on. But with the closing sentence, his hand began to curve and steal forward. And the instant the amen was out, the fly was a prisoner of war.
I was reading out on the patio one day last summer, and I felt a tickle on my leg. I reached down to flick it off and became intrigued with the activity down there. The tiniest of spider mites was marching boldly up one of my most independent leg hairs. Shortly, the spider's weight bent the tip of the hair over, like one of Robert Frost's birch trees. Well, the adventurous little creature swayed about gloriously at the tip for a bit, surveying its environment. I knew it must have thought it was in some beautiful, dense, enchanted forest atop one of the highest, most majestic of trees. Suddenly, to my amazement, it launched out its thread to my skin and scampered down, pranced back up and down again. For its finale, it eased down from the tip on only a millimeter or two of thread, swinging out free, fun, like a mountain climber rappelling off the summit.
Mr. T, bareheaded, in a soiled undershirt, his hair standing out on all sides, stood on his toes, heels together, arms gracefully, for the moment, curled above his head. Then he whirled about, bounded into the air, with an entrechat perfectly achieved, completed the figure. My mother, taken by surprise where she sat in her invalid's chair, was left speechless. "Bravo!" she cried at last, and clasped her hands together. The man's wife came from the kitchen. "What goes on here?" she said. But the show was over.
I was probably 3 or 4 years old, standing in the yard halfway between the sand pile and the house. I can see in my mind how everything looked. I had on a blue plaid flannel shirt and blue corduroy trousers. When the realization came to me, for the first time in my life, I am me. And then I looked at Noodle by her doghouse, and I knew that she didn't know that she was she, and that she never would.
My grandpa told me his magic moment was when he met Grandma.
It was a very ordinary moment. I woke up in the night at the cottage and lay listening to Grandpa's little snores through the wall and Grandma's breathing. And all around me on the floor in their sleeping bags, all my cousins and my sisters, and my aunt on the sofa, everybody breathing in their own rhythms, and the dog shifting around and giving a snort, and the old bed making a creak through the wall in the room where my mom and dad were, and I felt a kind of peace and contentment spread over me like a blanket. Everyone was here, and all right, and I was in the middle of all that, breathing and belongingness.
Magic moments come in all shapes, sizes, varieties. They can be huge as the starry sky, small as a bug. They can be seen or heard or felt. They can be a discovery, a realization, a surprise, an understanding, a new feeling, an old feeling seen through new eyes, a moment when everything falls into place. They can surprise, entertain, amuse, make us wonder, make us ponder. They are unexpected, unsought, and such moments of pure magic stay with us under our surfaces, and the remembrance of them sends out little spurts of gladness at unexpected times. Will you share with us a magic moment of your own?
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.